Think about a suit. We use the word itself to mean someone in a position of authority. And when we think about who typically wears suits, we mostly picture men, businessmen, bankers, lawyers. Suits have symbolized masculinity and power since at least the Victorian era. And for almost as long, people have been experimenting with the suit and in subverting its meanings. That's one of the key themes in the new gender-bending fashion exhibition at the Museum of Fine Arts. It's the first ever large-scale exhibition of non-binary fashion, featuring designs from Christian Siriano, Yves Saint Laurent, Gucci, and a bold pattern suit from Philadelphia-based fashion designer Wally Wijede. Wijede will be at the MFA today to talk about his work and the fashion brand he founded, Ikaria Jones. But we caught up with him first, and I began by asking him to tell us about the mission of his brand.
Sure. So Ikaria Jones is a fashion brand that uses inspirations from all over the globe, primarily West Africa, which is where I'm from, and classical European art, to use fashion as a vehicle for storytelling about marginalized populations, immigrants, refugees, migrants, asylum seekers, all through the veil of beautiful clothing.
And Wally, I'm wondering who you want to wear your clothing, your target audience. You know, you're elevating people of color in your designs. I noticed that you use people of color as models most often. Are you also hoping that white audiences will wear your pieces, or do you see that as cultural appropriation?
I think it's a very good question. It's a relevant one. I'm glad that people care to ask these days, but I think we also need to move to the point of intent. So I walk into a Japanese restaurant. I love sushi. If I choose to make sushi at my home, it doesn't mean that I'm appropriating Japanese culture. It means I very much appreciate and hope to learn from sushi. Or if I listen to a certain form of music that is from a certain background, it doesn't mean I'm stealing. It means I simply appreciate. I think the issue comes across when people kind of forget where things come from and tend to not attribute. But I think as long as due homage and reflection is made upon the origins, there's no reason we can't all enliven and inform each other's lives. So that's a long way of saying this is art from a certain perspective, but it's certainly for everyone. There's no reason we should sit in our cultural boxes and not speak to each other.
Sounds a little like you want your buyers, though, to understand what you're trying to accomplish in your designs and not to simply just say, hey, that's a cool design. I want to wear that.
You know, it's actually both. I think there is, as all art, it can simply be a beautiful piece of work that is pleasing to the eye, or if one is so interested, they can dive in deeper and engage with the issues that are particularly relevant to me. You know, a pop song can just be a pop song by the Beatles, or it can have layers and layers of meaning that people attribute to it. And I think there's no wrong answer. You like it for whatever reason you do.
You know, I've heard you say elsewhere that you believe fashion can be used as a vehicle for social change. What do you mean by that? I think that people who are not into fashion might say, oh, that sounds awfully high-minded. You know, maybe you're just making pretty clothes. How can it actually affect social change?
Well, I think we need a bit more high-mindedness in our world generally. So I think, you know, fashion is something that is ubiquitous. We all wear clothing, and we may think we, quote-unquote, don't care about fashion, but each of us has something we put on because it gives us confidence, because it makes us feel good, or simply because we don't want to make a certain statement to the world, whether it's a statement of success or a statement even of blending in. So we communicate messages to each other, and sadly, fashion in general has often been used as a divider, as a sign of exclusivity, as a sign of showing who does and does not belong to things. And so with that same strength, I kind of flip the narrative and use fashion as a way to bring us together by showing the many things we have to contribute to conversation and showing how we all have places in the rooms, places in the boardroom, places within the museum, places on the gallery wall, by showing that we can all contribute and create excellence and we all have beauty within us to a show.
So I'm wondering, and this is something I'm sure you've thought about a lot, as you are designing pieces that help to tell the stories of people who've been historically marginalized, people of color, immigrants, how do you walk that line between telling their stories and commerce? You know, your scarves go for $285. I noticed the suit jacket that's part of the MFA exhibition costs $575. So, you know, some of these pieces could be out of reach for a lot of people, period, and including some of the people that you're trying to honor in your designs.
Absolutely. I think it's a lengthy conversation. I think the first thing to do is think about what is the worth of work. Things look expensive because people who make them have been paid a fair wage. So the question is, what would you hope to be paid for spending, you know, 12 to 24 hours making something by hand? So that's the explanation for why my things cost why they do. Now, as far as the individuals depicted, for me, it's all about giving people a voice. So when we travel to places like Italy or to the American border and feature asylum seekers and migrants, it's about giving them a voice. It's not about treating them like furniture or as a background or exploiting them for their stories. Individuals are depicted in ways that they hope to be seen, wearing clothing that they think is beautiful. They're paid a fair wage, as professional models would be paid, and they have full collaboration with the way their stories are told. And frankly, people who have been, and I'm speaking generally, but people who are oftentimes refugees and migrants are pretty tired of seeing themselves shown mostly as victims. You know, they would like a break as well. They would like to be seen as beautiful. So it tends to be a project that's not a difficult sell.
Well, and I understand that your pieces became an even less difficult sell after one of them was featured in the movie Black Panther, right? This is one of the scarves. It's from Wakanda with Love, worn by King T'Challa, who's portrayed by Chadwick Boseman in the film. I mean, this was one of the biggest films of last year, and beyond that, a real cultural moment. So how did it feel to be included in that, and how did it happen?
You know, it's a moment of vindication. I've been working with this brand as long as my single lovely child has been alive. So it's 6 going on 7. And I think it's, if anything, it's a testament to the idea that when you have a vision and you make work that's at the highest possible level, eventually the world comes to you. So yeah, Black Panther was fantastic. And I think the idea that I didn't have to compromise what I've been saying and what I'll continue to say, that the idea that we have merit, we have worth, and we are just as beautiful as everyone else. It was nice to kind of get that cosign from the world of Disney. And it's nice to be, you know, in an era where the world is receptive to different perspectives and being aware that we are all enlivening and enriching our lives by listening to each other.
So I know you're in Boston this week to speak at the Museum of Fine Arts, where one of your suits is featured in the gender-bending fashion exhibition that I mentioned earlier. This is the first large-scale exhibition about non-binary fashion, and I want to ask you a little bit about the piece that's featured, but I want to set it up, too, by playing a little bit of sound from Young Thug, because he drew a lot of attention a few years ago when he wore a dress on the cover of his Jeffrey album, and here he is talking about that in a 2016 Calvin Klein ad.
In my world, of course, it don't matter, you know. You could be a gangster with a good dress, or you could be a gangster with baggy pants. I feel like there's no such thing as gender.
So that iconic image of Young Thug in the rapper is really the first thing you see when you enter this exhibition, and you see the dress at the MFA as you go in. How do you define gender-bending fashion, Wally?
So my clothing really is just supposed to express, it's intended to express beauty, and it's not made for any particular identification. Those who are drawn to it, like all of my art, are those who it's for. We just make suits, and if you've got two legs, you can put them on. Doesn't matter what else you have.
So can you describe the piece that you have in the MFA exhibition?
Certainly. That piece is called the Vines Number 3 suit. It's inspired by the forests, and it's got what looks to be foliage. And I think oftentimes when we think of suits that men wear, particularly in the U.S., it's, you think of a classic banker pinstripe suit or a solid gray or navy. And sadly, we've been kind of constricted into these very limited ideas of what can be elegant, what can be beautiful. And I think perhaps women tend to feel a bit more freedom by wearing prints in bold colors. And I think with my work, it kind of extols the idea that there's no reason one cannot be bold but still be taken seriously at the same time.
And when you're designing a piece like that Vines suit, are you intentionally playing with gender? Or is it just a matter of seeing it through different eyes? Perhaps it wouldn't be viewed as gender bending at all in West Africa.
I don't think so. I think, you know, again, we look at different parts of the globe. The idea of what is or is not masculine is very different culturally, just as the idea of what perhaps is or is not used for food. And we have different ingredients. We make them up in our own way.
So on that subject of gender and how it's maybe viewed by geography, you know, at the MFA, there are actually two big fashion exhibitions right now. There's the gender-bending fashion one we've been talking about. There's also the South African Art, Fashion, and Identity exhibition, which showcases modern South African fashion. And, you know, when my producer Zoe went, she said that she felt like there was a real overlap between the two, especially in the men's garments. And we were just talking, Wally, about how, you know, gendered fashion or our conceptions of that are defined by culture. I was thinking of my own Scottish heritage, for example, and men in kilts, which look, you know, very much like skirts to American eyes. I mean, how much are those things intertwined?
It is interesting the way we choose to divide and the reasons, the political reasons for that. So if you think of the kilts in Scotland, you think of what Ghanaians or Indonesians might wear, which look like tunics or skirts in the West. These are things that are very, very masculine in these parts of the world, and it's not a second thought to what they are. Yet here in the U.S., there's pause and there's hesitation about what makes a man, or if there's a woman's wearing a skirt, there's insecurity about what it is that she's trying to say, and it's unfortunate. You know, I think that with so much happening, with such great concerns we have around us, with the planet, you know, imminently being in severe danger, there are perhaps greater things to be concerned about than how many legs a garment has.
That's fashion designer Wally Uwizeude, whose work is featured at the MFA's Gender Bending Fashion Exhibition. Wally, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Take care.